Hello and welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today I have Dallas on, who is a student psychologist and one of my very close friends who helps me see into the psyche of people, my clients, myself, so that I can be a better coach as well. And within this podcast, we start off with just getting into the stuff that we don't really talk about, but it's the stuff that makes shit stick so that you don't revert back to your old habits, you don't revert back to your coping mechanisms, to your comfort zone that is the place that you want to move so desperately away from. And throughout the episode, we get more, I guess, more refined into perfectionism, body image, emotional eating, and getting ourselves away from our false beliefs and stories that we tell ourselves. So with that, I hope this episode helps you. And if the perfectionism and body image struggles resonate with you, I do implore you to use some of these strategies to slow down and question the stories that you do tell yourself and if they are really serving you.
The difference is the fact that some people can take honesty quite easily, in the sense that you can understand it if you think about it as a blueprint for life, that in a sense that you know that if you build the bricks, you can get the foundations. You build the foundations, you can now put up the walls. And that's where honesty comes, where the person goes, right, I've just knocked down the house to its foundation. I can build from that position, right? Where other people, they need to be able to be driven, or should I say, it's like leading the horse to the water. They need to be step-by-step approach to that position. And you've got to discern which position a person's in. Are the person who needs to be led, and they need to be effectively, you know, going through doors that open their ability to see and understand? Or do they need a complete reality check, which is, you're not as good as you think you are. This is not going the way you think it is. And from that position, they can reevaluate it. So it all depends on who the person is, or how they perceive, or how they take information in. And when you know that, that's how you cater the way you talk to them. So it's like, how do you see that in your view? Or why do you see it in that position? Or what is the long-term outcome of that compared to going, hey, what you're currently doing is not working. But if you want to keep doing that, by all means do. But 6 months down the line, you are not going to be in the position you want to be. So you either listen to me or you're not going to get there. Converse to the other person, which is, where do you see yourself in 6 months if you continue this behavior? And then you get to like, well, and you're like, okay, dig into it. Let's see what you come from that position. You pray, you effectively bring a pros and cons assess.
What if they're not even at that level of awareness? Or number two, what if they recognize that they start making progress, but always revert back to the usual and they don't gather enough momentum? Why do you see that to be the case? And how do you usually deal with that?
A lot of reverting back to change is because, or reverting back to old habits is because the new stuff is not implemented. It's not easily triggered. So the environment doesn't trigger it. And the person hasn't overcome what keeps them in the past. In the sense is that we often look back and reminisce about times in the past that we're like, yes, that's when I was at my best, neglecting what was actually occurring during that time period. So if you want to think about it, when we create projects, what we often do is we look at the times we go backwards or say new goals. And we go like, hey, when I was 20, it only took me 6 months. But we neglect to put in the environment we were in when we were 20. We had no responsibilities. We were most likely in college or not. We had a lot of time off. We had so many things to do with very little responsibilities. So then when we come to say 30, 40, 50s or whenever it is, you're making a new plan, you look back and go, look, it took me 6 months, but you discount everything else that was in the environment. So you automatically put yourself at disadvantage when you make your new habits. And then secondly as well, is when you in that same position and you end up going, hey, I want to create new habits so I can lose weight. we often spend time doing the habits, but we also reinforce the old habits. In the sense how we reinforce it, we never truly let go of the past and go, hey, let me make a set of new habits that are going to support me and keep going. And what you end up recognizing is people create new habits along with their old habits, but never truly let go of it. When they don't let go of it, if something falls or something goes wrong, what is the first thing they're going to go back to? The old habits, because they've had it for longer. And this is how you always see reverting change. It's like pretty simple. I was like, you see it every day. I was like, the sum of your old behaviors is what you're going to do naturally. No one wants to accept that. I was like, it takes time to change habits, but it also takes time to build upon it. And everyone wants it done in 1 month. I don't get it.
The whole time warp of everybody wants shit done yesterday. And if it's not yesterday, it's next week or this month. I don't understand. Well, I should say in the process, it is misunderstood from both sides. Why can't we just see it? And they see it, but they don't see it. And I guess that brings you back to the doors. Like, some need to be open. Some doors you can't tell if they're there. Like when I broke my nose, I didn't see the door that was there. I just went running right to the door and broke my nose. Like, I didn't see that door. But then there are other doors that you can see through them and you can see ahead. But then there are other doors that are just reflecting the past. So they do not see where they could possibly be, because like we were talking about before the podcast, inability to deal with overwhelm. And when you mentioned that they can't be honest with me, with any other coach, with any other person, I feel like they're not even being honest with themselves. So maybe we can talk about that self-discovering piece of it and why people don't let go of the past.
How about we use you as an example for the podcast? Because this is going to work really well. Give us an honest appraisal of your strengths and weaknesses.
My strengths are that I'm very persistent. My weaknesses are probably that of most other people, in that even though I'm persistent, it's almost like a scattered focus versus a straight shooting laser beam kind of thing. So a strength is the ability to keep going no matter what and not just give up and do nothing. And the other strength is I don't give a fuck. I just do, and I try, and I fail, and I try again. And that's something a lot of people are scared of as well. But yeah, the weaknesses would be that scattered vision. Not scattered vision, but scattered.
Okay. So now let's take a look at it. You had the ability to be honest, right, and give me anything that could be a strength and weakness. And you give me a pretty bog standard, hey, look, I'm persistent, this is my strength, and oh, this is not what I do. You could have poured your heart out in a sense that some of my strengths are X, Y, and Z, and this is what it means for me and all that occurs with it. And you could have said weakness, and you could have poured your heart out. So you expect clients to be honest with themselves when the majority of people have an inability to be honest with themselves, which is, tell me the hard parts of life. Is that truly easy to be honest with yourself, knowing that some of the things you have done have put you in the situation you are in? Is it easy enough to be honest with yourself and understand that some of the things that have occurred in your life is hard to deal with and you don't know how to deal with it? So it's what's easier, telling yourself a story that everything is okay so that you can get through life, which is incredibly tough as it is, or is it better to be able to see life for what it truly is? Because isn't it like, you know, love's in the bliss, you know, being blissful is a wonderful thing, and being ignorant of everything around you can often make things the happiest. Look at people who often get to serious states of depression. Some of the things they talk about is raw, honest appraisal of life. So the question comes then down to, is the person truly wanting to be honest, or is there a degree of honesty that's needed in order for them to see a goal? And if you want to look at this on a continuum, there is being brutally honest with yourself, which can be very uplifting for somebody, or it can be very bad for someone and put them into a terrible position. So the key for you then is to recognize, right, how do I once again bring them through the doors? How do I bring the person to go, hey, I only need you to give me 1% honesty? But you also need to recognize that some of the things you've done has caused the issues you're currently going through, and some of them might not be your fault, and that's perfectly okay. And this is a big thing. It's like, especially when it comes to therapy, it's like you've got to recognize there are things that you contribute to and things that you don't contribute to. But it's not easy accepting your place in the problem. So it's like, what am I going to do? Okay, I'm going to tell myself a story that is not going to happen.
I think something that a lot of people struggle with, especially moms in this situation, like the way that I just picked out the first thing that came to mind, which was the first honest, it was an honest thing that came to mind, which is all I could honestly think of. But I think that's the problem with a lot of busy moms that are actually sitting, like trying to figure it out. They're too busy looking in their direction or just being go, 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 or they're just so fast paced down that road that they don't actually see the other stuff. Like I have two clients, for example, that have so much to worry about for their family, for the kids, for the business that they run, for literally everything. But because they're in such a dysfunctional environment, this is actually something I'm going to bring up as well, because they're in such a dysfunctional environment, it's feeding that pattern.
Mm.
And down to that dysfunctional environment, she has a very overweight family, one of them, and their habits aren't really helping her. It's almost like the identity is tied to that, because you always gravitate to the people that are around you most. And when your family is overweight and you're trying to not be overweight, that doesn't really help you. So there's two different situations there. But then actually before, you're going to have to try to remember both these things, because this is important. You mentioned memories of going back to the past and not putting it into context of what happened then, what's happened in between and where you are now. There are two different things. One is you're scared of going back to the past without realizing you've grown in the process. And number two is you think that what happened in the past is exactly how you recall it, but the psychology of memories proves that memories aren't real. So tell us more about that and how that can help with people trying to move forward.
Well, I would say memories are definitely real. It's just you got to take into an aspect of how we encode memories, in the sense that one of the quickest ways to encode a memory is stress and trauma, right? So it's like, if you want to, the easiest demonstration of learning something and creating a memory is picturing the hot plate. As a kid, you have some kids who put their hand on the hot plate, even though they're told not to, right? So you're told, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. We have memories of saying, don't do it. But what do you remember as soon as you do it and you get burnt? It's an instantaneous, it's like effectively burnt into the soul. Now, as time goes on, you're going to see degradation of how you recall that. You're going to be like, oh, look, I ran, I slipped, I fell, or I wasn't paying attention, I put my hand on there. What ends up changing is your narrative, your mood, and how you look at life and how you access those memories. So if you want to think about it, every time you can access memories, and go in and out, there's a possibility it's going to change naturally. You have a different view. You can see it from a different light now. You have changed as a person. So you're naturally not going to be able to recall the same memory. The difference is that we are not a computer. When you put, you know, a picture onto a computer or take a picture, that's exactly it. You can fast forward a billion years and the picture will be exactly the same. Memory doesn't work like that. So it's like recognizing that the past is a past, and how you are in the present will dictate how you see it, how you interpret it, how you feel it. For the simplistic measure of trying to recognize this for people is, recall some of your best fond memories from a childhood, from whenever, right? And when you're happy, recall the memory. When you're feeling down, recall the memory and notice the differences between the two. There is going to be a stark contrast. You are going to notice that when you're happy, it is extremely uplifting. But when you're in a bad mood or down mood and you do it, it's going to lift your personality up, no problem. But you're not going to get the same boost. You're not going to get the same, the colors, the memory doesn't feel as vibrant because you are dictated based on the present and the mood and how you recall it. So that's the interesting part. What that means for the person trying to get somewhere is that when we try to set goals or set habits or do something, we often look at the memories and we tell ourselves how the memory was. We're like, this is exactly how it worked out. So we discount everything in the environment. We discount the present. We discount the future because it's easier to say, hey, when I lost weight the last time, these are all the things that occurred and this is why it went well. But we don't look at the aspect of going, right, what went wrong? What was the environment like? What was I triggered? What was the position I was in? Because if we do that, most of us won't actually set goals. Because now we have to actually come to terms with what went wrong, what went right. So this is why when you see when we goal plan, it's often, especially when you're trying to help someone see the past, you go like, when the last time you lost weight? And they go, 20 years ago. And you go, what did you do? And they go, I did keto. And you go, right, what was the environment that you were in? And the person was like, okay, I had a relatively stressless job. Perfect. Exercise 5 times a week. I wasn't happy with the food I ate, but I still did it. So you go, right, what were the other problems that occurred during that time period? Oh, there weren't any problems. Like, how were there not any problems? Humanity is filled with problems. So when you bring in the past to inform the present, you have to take into account the memory, the mood you're in, as well as all the things that possibly you discount. And that means that you always have to ask yourself, what went wrong? What did I do? Where did things go wrong in a sense of how I dieted? What didn't I like? What was there that I'm missing then? And then you'll start noticing the memory will start to actually be a bit more encompassing of what was at that time, instead of, I just lost weight and I look great, which is cool, you did. But what was all the struggles that went along with it? As soon as you tag the two of them together, you often see people make better plans. They get in a better position. Because now you're truly informed for the present and the future, knowing, hey, when I did X, Y, and Z, these are the sum of problems I incurred. If I do that again, I'm probably going to have the similar problems. So does that mean I can change it?
I'm actually very, very self-aware when it comes to fitness and health kind of stuff. So a way that I can kind of make this relatable to the people listening is, for example, I could easily say, because I am filled with seeing people powerlifting and bodybuilding, blah, 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 just like everyone else is, but because no one else has put themselves through it before, or they don't really know what it takes, it's really easy to say, oh my God, I want to go on stage, or oh my God, I want to do this, oh my God, I want to do that, oh my God, they look great. And you cling to the appearance of it all. But when I see that stuff, I'm like, ah, I aspire to that. But at the same time, as soon as I say that, I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just going to keep doing my shit. But why? Because I remember the problems that arose when I was doing both those things. Like, yeah, powerlifting doesn't incur the same dieting, fatigue, blah, blah, blah. But I felt like I wasn't enjoying myself at the gym. I felt like it was a chore. I felt like a failure. I used to text my coach all the time saying that I felt weak. I'm shit. I'm this. I'm that. All because I failed a target that was so freaking specific. And it got to a point where I was not even, like, I looked forward to it, but then as soon as it came, I didn't, because I knew, oh my God, there's going to be pain inflicted. And actually, and my result and how I perform on the day depends on how I perform this very moment, because powerlifting is very performance-based. Whereas now, like this week, for example, I honestly did not, like, I was looking forward to training for the next day, but as soon as the next day came, I'm like, fuck, I actually have to meet the lifts that I did last time. Like, it's going to be tough. But I didn't have that same, my performance is relying on this. It's, I am doing this for myself because I want to beat myself. It's got nothing to do with an outcome depending on my performance. So I don't have that same connection to it. And the same with bodybuilding, like I knew what that took, and both of them required me to just be so hyper-focused on both of those things. And because I had to make a weight class, my body was so stressed out hormonally, everything. And I didn't want to have to make a weight to pass or fail to hit a certain lift. And then there's a comp day and all that. Like, I know what was involved. And for a normal person in life, that is not something
that they can fit into their already overwhelmed, dramatic life. Yet they aspire or they compare themselves to all these images online, wanting to have those after photos, wanting to have that 6 week, 12 week progress, because that's mostly what's shown out there. And what isn't to do with bodybuilding is some stupid dumbass coach putting them on some stupid dumbass program where, okay, they have that memory of, oh my God, it was great, I got results. But because it was their first time, that's all they knew. And they don't remember anything bad because they were so motivated. And motivation and a desperation for an outcome can numb the pain and can completely change the reception and perception of that pain, which is something that I learned from Luke, which is something you can probably, because I remember when he was really freaking hungry, he was able to just not eat all that much because he was so out for that one outcome. But then as soon as he didn't have that outcome anymore, he couldn't be driven for it anymore. And that's why so many people gain the weight back.
But that also ties into issues that comes with that, in the sense that being driven is a wonderful thing. But don't get me wrong, it's a truly wonderful thing to be driven for a cause. But what people don't recognize is, what are the sacrifices? What are the problems that occur with being driven? And I'm not saying this as something that people shouldn't be driven. I'm saying that before you set your sights on a target, understand wholesomely what occurs. We often look to athletes as the pinnacle of health. Yeah, athletes are some of the worst people for health. And everyone's like, no, but they got six packs. Oh, that doesn't matter. I was like, you got to take into account that athletes train multiple times a day. They go through high amount of stress environments. Not all of them get great sleep. You got to take into some of those who take drugs, and everyone's like, no, high athletes don't. Come on, get the fuck out of here. They do. But then it's the aspect of all the amount of training you do, all the amount of kind of pushing, the drive, all of that changes hormonal outputs within the body. There is only so much the body can sustain. So as you want to take a look at it, we often see, especially like in CrossFit, if you have 26-year-olds that look like they're in their 30s. There is a sheer amount of stress that ages the body. There is only so much we can take. And this is the same thing happens with athletes. So it's like, driven is a wonderful thing, but you've got to understand that there's being driven, and then there's going, hey, I want to achieve something. Because driven, you will sacrifice anything and everything to get to that point. That means you will do insane stuff. You will do crazy things to get to that, because at any point in time, you're like, I have to, I have no choice. Where if you use more of achievement, hey, I would like to achieve X, Y, and Z, you're opening a boundary that is so small, and actually open it to make it bigger, that now you have wiggle room to fit in life. You have the ability and capacity to do something that not only benefits you in the long term. It's a simple change from driven to achieve. Is so simple in terms of how you do things. One is usually always sacrifice, and the other is now no longer sacrifice, but self-care and self-love.
That's why it's really important to have that vision of a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, which is something I learned from you as well. But just like you do with memories, you need to put context to it, because you're not just a freaking robot, or you're not just like, people expect to have a plan freaking 3 months from now, 6 months from now. It's not a plan. It's a vision, and exactly. What happens in the process changes. And I want to lead this into the whole perfectionism thing, but because perfectionism is probably one of the biggest things that holds a lot of people back. They make it like I'm great because everything I do is so good. Like, they aim for that standard all the time, but people also try to do everything all at the same time, all at once, without realizing you can't pick up new habits without making space for them, because you just add to your plate. But like you were saying with the driven thing, it's knowing how you want to feel, because you are living a life, and anything that is shutting life off to get to a certain place is only going to be temporary in the long run. And that's why there are a lot of like athletes, for example, that gain all the weight back once they're retired. That's why there are freaking powerlifters that are bung up and bruising and bashed and broken and all that kind of shit by the time they're retired. Like, that shit is, one, not healthy. Two, they don't know how to live a life outside of the athletism So they feed themselves the same way they fed themselves the whole time they were an athlete. No wonder they gained the friggin' weight back. Like, people don't talk about that stuff afterwards. But now that I remember, because my brain did its little... I was trying to ramble until I found the point I wanted because my... But anyway, so like something else that CompRep did for me was it skewed my whole body image and the perception of my body to the point like it even screwed up the fact that I couldn't bring out a freaking food scale as much as I wanted to track my food because I love being able to track my food and knowing I'm in control of what I put in my body, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I love doing that stuff. But when I didn't have that element to just put it on autopilot, it gave me more stress. Like I couldn't actually do the one thing I wanted to do because it was a deterrent. And the other one was I didn't see myself as lean. So I kept myself too lean for too long. And that just led to me having more hormonal issues, which everyone else there out there has once they get to an end goal. They have a whole skewed up perceived image of what maintenance looks like or what weight loss should look like or their smallest self looks like.
That's very true. It's hard for people to recognize that some of the things they do is negatively impacting, but also in some sense, it's a positive impact. And take into account for you and your tracking. Positively, you get a relief from doing it. You assumingly feel in control. And I put that in inverted brackets for everyone listening, for it's an assumption that we do that we, when we're doing it, we're like, yeah, no, this is making me better. But there's a negative aspect in the same sense that if it becomes a crux, how is it truly a positive? I love doing it. Oh, but I feel in control. It's like, what are you controlling? And everyone's like, oh, but my intake. It's like, no, you're controlling an emotion that you're feeling. That's what you're trying to do. You're not controlling intake and knowing the data. And this is where there's each behavior has a positive and negative that can come from it. And not everything means that it's always going to be bad, but it's also taking a time to recognize that some of the behaviors that we employ in the day are there to regulate our state of emotion rather than to regulate the control that we think we're trying to get. In the sense that we think that, oh, if I control every gram, every micronutrient, every macronutrient, I am going to be in control. It's like, but what are you truly saying to people on the outside? I don't feel control with how I'm feeling. And by placing this onto a tool, now I feel that I can regulate my own internal state. This is how I keep things in check. This is how I now can bring love to myself. This is how it can look good because I can't accept what it is. Now, this is not for everybody, but it is something that we often neglect to think of.
That is actually something that can be seen as a negative when it comes to people going to food for coping mechanisms, because that's when it actually turns into a negative. Whereas the other way, to me, it's more like it's on autopilot. You can actually give more of that time, attention, energy to life because now you have the food kind of, you're aware of it. And the more that you do it, the more education you have around food, the more that you can actually have a week away and be more flexible with it and have that buffer to not like lose your health, lose your body composition, lose your results. Like that's what it brings you. But two posts, three, I'm going to read out that I want you to actually talk on because they are fucking powerful. Food will always be your way of coping when you have a high degree of negative self-talk and doubt. And I also want to add into that when you have an inability to deal with overwhelm. A lot of people go to food for coping.
Yes.
Luckily not me. With me, if it's me, it's like freaking lettuce. But anyway. The other one is negative body thoughts and emotions will always occur. Rather than trying to suppress them, aim to be flexible in how you see your body image. And on that note, the whole thing where body acceptance does not mean that you don't want to change or you don't want to make your body better for yourself, but it's just accepting and taking ownership of where you are right now. And like we said before, acknowledging everything you've done to get to this point to take you to where you could possibly be once you take ownership of your current moment. And then the most important, that's actually the most important part, food will always be a coping if you have a high degree of negative self-talk, because everyone, like, negative self-talk and perfectionism, I think, are the two things that I just want you to give practical points as well as examples of situations you've dealt with food and fitness in particular, with your clients.
So I deal with perfectionism differently depending on the person. And the reason why I say it's different on the person is because when we're talking at the beginning, some deserve a slap in the face and some don't. Right. Yes. And that depends on the person. So what I would often say is that if you can take harsh words, if you can take the reality as it is, you need to sit down with yourself and take a look and go, right, what is my perfectionism actually offering me? And everyone's like, oh, it's offering me all these opportunities. And I was like, when was the last time perfectionism actually offered you an opportunity that didn't take away something on the back end? And everyone's like, it never takes things away. I was like, right, okay. So if you need to do, we come in at the end of the month, let's take accountants. You already know that, like, you know, end of month accounts need to be done, or end of quarter, sorry. You're going to be spending a lot more time. You have two kids. So you already know you're going to be working overtime. There's being perfectionist in the sense that everything needs to be hit perfectly on time. Each report has a certain deadline and you need to hit that perfectly, right? That means you're going to be spending more time at work. And you're like, but I'm being perfect. It's going to help me in the long run. But then the negative aspect is it, what about the two children at home that never get the mother? What about the person who's overstressed because you've put such tight boundaries on yourself, but you're like, yes, but it's perfect. And it's like, no one cares about perfect. No one can be perfect. You're part of a chaotic system. So when you have harsh realities dealing with perfectionism, often when you challenge your thoughts of what the positive outcome from your perfectionism and then list the cons of trying to be perfect, the cons always outweigh the positives. So the aspect is you shouldn't strive for being perfect, but rather for doing the best you can in the boundary you have. Now, there are other ways of doing it in the sense that when you build the person through it, which is you try and teach them that there's two truths in the sense that you can have perfectionism and you can have a good life. So those are the two truths. And now you're going, right, now how do we actually achieve that in life? And where do we compromise? And the person's like, well, we can't compromise. We were like, well, then there can't be two truths, can they? Because again, it has to be some form of compromise. So the person now is in a position to ask the question of going, right, if I'm going to be perfect, what are the things that I'm going to have to let go of in order to be perfect? And you see this person starts writing down a list and you see the list gets bigger and bigger and bigger for one thing of perfection. And now you ask the person, you go, right, which one are you willing to do or which few are you willing to give up in order so you could be perfect at work? You could be perfect at the gym, perfect at whatever you're trying to do. And then the person has to come to the realization, which it hits quite hard, that as soon as you have to be perfect, you often are taking away 2, 3, 4, 5 things away from your life that makes life itself.
A Dallas question, because you actually framed this one for clients, is what even is perfect? Quantify it.
You can't. It's impossible. Because
what other questions would you figure out?
You could go, obviously, what is perfect, but also how do you view perfect? How do you quantify it? How do you know other people see it the same way? Is everyone seeing perfectionism the same way? What you end up trying to do is you want to question the root of your perfection as well. So when did you first start wanting to be perfect? And the person's like, oh, I don't know. And you're like, think about it hard. Was it when you were a teenager or was it a kid? What did you get from being perfect? Was it that you were noticed? Or was it, were you trying to control for something? Majority of people are going to tell you that they did it because it got them noticed. And it's why a lot of people still do it. But also a lot of people have perfectionistic tendencies because it's an aspect of believing they can control the environment without recognizing you don't control the environment. The only person you control is you. And I was like, and then we can drive down to that one, which is there's only so much you do control. So it's like when you can recognize that if your perfectionistic tendencies are based on, say, like fear, control or noticing, and you understand which category you're in, now you have a chance to actually change the outcome. But it's still, once again, what are you getting from perfectionism? What are you quantifying it with? No one has an answer because no one can answer it. They're like, but it's good work. What's good work? Well, people appreciate it. So once again, it's been noticed and appreciated that you're looking for. So why can't you appreciate yourself?
There's a lot of this that's based off what you think other people want. And when you're speaking, or I'm thinking this person you're talking about doesn't have a clear vision of what the fuck they even want. Mm-hmm. So they're clinging to whatever it is, because what they like my old example, what they think they want is not really what they want, but because they're so worried about body image, that's all they're focused on. Like, you lose weight to start with, or you're really lean, you get compliments for it, freaking body compliments, this body compliments, that, so then you tie yourself to those body compliments all the time. So that's what you start to identify with, versus realizing that what you really want is to be happy within your body and confident within your body, to go after it, to feel good within yourself. Like, I feel amazing when I know that I'm challenging myself and overcoming challenges when it comes to my fitness and my health, for example. Like, when I'm pushing myself in the gym when I didn't want to go, but I overcame it and I showed myself, hey, you can do it. And the fact that I am in control of sculpting my body as it is what gives me confidence, because I know that if I'm not happy with the direction I'm going, I'm the one that's in the freaking driving seat to then turn the car a different direction, and I can change my body to be confident with it then. And another post you put up, which I want you to dig into, investing in your appearance can build a better body image and thus confidence, which is really what we do want. And that allows us to be a lot more consistent with everything we're doing, because we're confident in ourselves. We have that vision. Yes. We're feeling. Because if we're not feeling, we're just a shell. So I'll let you ramble on.
It's funny when you explain these to clients, when you're like, actually trying to gain confidence is quite a simple process, especially if you turn it into a goal-oriented approach, and then you recognize how we do it. So a lot of confidence is also the ability to do something. And it's like, we gain confidence by doing. We don't gain confidence by sitting there and pulling ourselves down. So if you want confidence in how your body, use your body, be flexible with it, do stuff, exercise. But it also the sense of, if you invest in your appearance, what are we effectively saying here? It's take time to love your body, go and get new clothes, go get a manicure, do things that make you happy about your own body. And it's a simplistic process. And everyone's like, how is that building confidence? It's every single time you put a dollar, you put 10 in, or whatever that number is, you're waiting for it to compound as time goes on. And think, every single time you negatively talk about your body, you're subtracting from that balance. And this is how we're building the investment in appearance or your confidence, is that when you go out and get a massage, and you're like, oh, I love the way my body feels now. You just said, I love the way my body feels. I like the way you've got a question, go for it.
No, I have something that you just sparked something. It's when you do what you said you're going to do, like when you say yes to that healthy meal. But the thing is, you're going to keep reverting back to the old shit. This actually just brings us all the way back to the start on, like, I just answered my own query, which I hope you guys can actually grasp this. Like, you're going to never want to reflect back on the past in that sense. You're going to keep reverting back to the past. If you're not freaking slowing down to celebrate the successes you've made thus far, and you just keep trying to strive for more. Okay, I tick this box. What's next? Okay, you're just this human doing, just ticking boxes all the time.
Yeah. So what I do with clients is I call it a daily PB. So in training, if you hit a max, it's a new personal best, right? Every day your PB counter starts anew. So that means that if you've gone out for a walk today, that's a PB. You've just personal best your walk for today. Don't care about yesterday. I don't care if you had 400,000 steps yesterday. If you got 10 today, that's today's PB. And every single time you look at the small little things and you go, hey, look, I had a wonderful meal today. That's a PB for your lunch. That's a PB for dinner. And everyone's just like, yeah, but it seems so stupid. And it's like, well, actually, what you're doing is you're changing the way you look at the little things you do in life that builds up. You're changing your base habits. so that as time goes on, you, when you're in a difficult time, you don't revert back to your crappy behaviors from years ago. You revert back to the, hey, look, I walked today. That's a PB. I did something for my body today. That's a PB. I took time to deal with my overwhelm. That's a personal best of the day. And that's a wonderful thing, because all you're doing is taking a little bit of money and just putting it in the jar. You're investing bit by bit by bit. And it doesn't matter what you did the day before, the week prior, or the year prior, because every single day you get to start the count again and show to yourself how you can invest in your own self. That is going to build your confidence, it's going to build your appearance, and it's going to build your love and care for yourself. And that's a simple, beautiful way. And if you want to take that further, take a jar, write down. So write down some of the things you've done today that have been wonderful. And when you get to a day that it's going to be, you're going to be struggling, which everyone is going to do, go and open the jar, pull out some of those pieces of paper and read them. And you'll watch that everyone's like, I feel better because I had a bad day 3 months ago, but I went for a walk and that was a personal best for the day. Or I went and had a massage. I went and did my hair. And the whole outcome now changed.
Girls, this, if you're a client of mine listening to this, I'm going to reinforce this. This is why it is something that I like to say is mandatory, even though not all of you do this, to post your wins on my weekend wins post, to celebrate yourselves. Because if you don't have those reminders there for you, if you don't post the things, say the things, what proof do you have that you can do this? Where's the proof? Where's the confidence bank account that you're building for yourself? Because if you aren't seeing your victories and your wins, we always see the present in a negative light. So you're comparing yourself to literally nothing else that's proving how you can get through this.
Yeah, it's wonderful, because as soon as you start shifting that mindset of why I can't do this to, hey, look what my buddy did do today, or what did I do for myself, you start noticing a lot of other things in life become a lot easier. Your ability to deal with stress and your ability to deal with overwhelm becomes so much easier. But a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the struggles when it comes to change is the inability to deal with overwhelm, the inability to deal with that tolerance. If you want to think about it as, if you have a tolerance band, right? In the sense that there is only so much you can tolerate before things get chaotic and you feel anxious, you feel overwhelmed, right? Now, I highly recommend every client and any person out there, sit down and figure out where your tolerance band is. And that means by pushing your comfort zone and recognizing how quick before you're like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And you get like shakes, you get anxiety, you get like, and you want to distract yourself at a high level, right? You know exactly everything up until that point where that level of tolerance is, right? Now that you know that, you can use the very simple thing of just pushing the boundary a bit. And the idea of trying to push your tolerance is so that when things get a little bit out of control in life, whether it be thanks to kids, whether it be thanks to life, whatever it may be, you have the tools to deal with it without shutting down or going to say something like food as a coping mechanism. So dealing with overwhelm comes from a simple practice of either meditating or using something to bring you back to the present. So one thing I like to use is anchoring, which is effectively, for a lot of people, if you listen to this, majority will either be sitting. So if you are, do it with me. You basically sit down, right? Put yourself on the chair. You're going to take 3 deep breaths in. Nice and easy, right? Now I want you to close your eyes. And you're going to put your hands on the side of the chair. And you're going to effectively push your feet and your hands into the chair while taking a few more deep breaths. Now what I want you to envision is an anchor coming off the side of a ship. We all know what it looks like, right? You're going to imagine that anchor getting closer and closer to the water while taking deep breaths. Good. It's now hit the water. you're going to still keep pushing into the chair. You're still going to be pushing your feet into the ground. Your eyes are still closed. You're going to keep taking as many deep breaths as you need as you envision the anchor getting closer and closer to the floor. It's getting closer and you're taking a deep breath in again. Soon as the anchor hits the floor, I want you to sink into the chair with a nice big deep breath. As you do, just breathe out nice and slowly and feel like you sunk into the floor and relax. Once you've done that, what effectively you're trying to do is you're regulating your, basically your whole autonomic system, right? But what you're trying to do is you're trying to deal with sensations in your body and you're trying to regulate it. So that heartbeat that was beating so fast before is going to calm down now. With each deep, slow breath out, the heart rate would slow down. That pushing into the chair, you're given a tactile feedback. It gives you something to ground against. Now you can hold space for the sensations within your body. What were you feeling? What did you notice? And where did it come from? Well, you can ask those questions to yourself now because you're no longer in an overwhelmed anxiety state. So now you can go, hey, what do I need to do that is most beneficial for me? Does that mean that I need to take some time away from whatever is happening? Okay. Is there a better way I can look at it? Okay. Or was the grounding sufficient enough to get me back in the present so I can keep going?
I feel like as well, because when we're in that hustle bustle overwhelm, that's when we're in our emotional brain, not our logical brain. And we pretty much live in an emotional brain these days. We don't have any logic to our actions half of the time. And this is why so many of us don't have any self-confidence or belief, because we aren't aware that we are in control. We don't know how to be in control because we're too busy going. We're on a speed track versus driving on a normal human road. And when you're going that fast, you have more chances of crashing. And that's when you keep fucking up, slipping off. That's when you feel like you have less and less confidence. And then you want to jump back to all these stupid cleanses and fads and stuff because you just want to, like, it's that goes back to that whole control thing and your coping mechanism of it. And because this post kind of works with it, just as you simplify shit for your kids, and you know that they're not going to be spot on, you still encourage them for their efforts. You want to simplify shit. You want them to be able to feel like they're capable. Otherwise, how are you bringing them up into the world? Why don't you do that with yourself?
Yep. And I think this is a big thing people don't recognize. It's we become adults. And we automatically think we need to know everything. We have to have everything sorted and that everything needs to be complex. I was like, don't get me wrong. There is complexity in life and there's complexity in movements and a lot of things. But going through life can be taking the easy route or the hard route. Take the hard route, for instance. Always constantly overwhelmed, never taking time to slow down, never taking time to look after you. It catches up. You can take the slow route. Dealing with your anxieties, dealing with your problems, taking the time to slow down, be there, be present, be emotionally invested. One is infinitely easier than the other. And one gets you further in life than the other because you're going to burn out. And usually when you burn out, you've seen it. I've seen it. Everything goes wrong. Food's the problem. Exercise the problem. Life's the problem. There's everybody else is the problem, but it's never the sum of behaviors. It's never how you looked at the world. It's never how you perceive things. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. This is where perfectionism can rub salt in the wound as well, because you'll just keep going and going and going, hoping things to get better. And this is where you need to be honest with yourself and ask, has it worked for me before? Has this way of approaching my food or my journey helped before? How's it serving me right now to keep plugging away at the same way that I'm going, to keep burning shit off in the gym, to keep trying to eat in a calorie deficit and then splurging on the weekends because you're not in a place to be on a freaking calorie deficit, but oh, he says you need to eat less and move more. Yeah, well, it's not for you right now because you can't even regulate your emotions. You haven't even spent time mentally away from chasing a smaller version of yourself. you haven't gained any traction to prove any form of confidence to yourself to even build momentum. And I guess this also to, because this is what I wanted to end on as well. So it's something I want you to kind of dig a little into with practical strategies for people to use when they're in this moment, because we all tell ourselves stories, and the story you tell yourself will either harm or help your self-confidence. And you can always change that narrative. You can always envision a better future and change the stories you tell yourself. They don't have to always be based in fact. You can base them on the person you want to become so that you tend towards that direction.
It's also about a complete narrative rewrite. And I think that what the issue is that we watch so much fantasy, you know, like House of Dragon, Game of Thrones, you know, anything in that record. And we see about how those people change. We see all these wonderful things about these people in fantasy, but we never decide to take that same principles that we see in fantasies, that we see in movies, and go, how do we apply that same writing towards ourselves? We always try to think that if we write ourselves in the harshest way possible, it's going to often give us the best change. You've seen it. There's a certain amount of people that think, well, majority of people believe that if the harsher you are in yourself and the story you tell yourself is that you're bad, you are going to change. What effectively you're telling yourself is that you are not capable of doing something, and this is the story you are going to live. So that means that I am bad, I can't lose weight, so, well, you can't lose weight. It's in a sense a self-fulfilling prophecy when your story is always on a negative accord. So it's like when you rewrite the story to be like, hey, I can make mistakes because I'm human, and that I do love myself, and that this can change. The narrative now gives you the ability to become better. I like the, you're like, oh.
No, because what if someone then says, I've always been overweight. I've never been able to keep my results. I've never been able to continue forth. I always self-sabotage. There's always something that happens and I go back to the start.
Okay.
How would you deal with that one?
Oh, if you base everything on always, that means you're never going to get there. You've already created the story of I never get there, of always. And the words you use are very powerful. And this is where the story rewrite changes, which is you can keep telling yourself you've always done something, it has never worked, and everything's changed. But then the question, especially from, I had a conversation with Ariana 2 weeks ago, and she was just like, have you tried everything? Ask yourself truly, what has changed and what have you done to change? And the beautiful aspect that comes from that is because now you're forced to change the narrative you're in. And when you're
change, that's where confidence comes from, the acting. What have you done to change? Keep going.
Yeah. So when you're in that position, you have the ability now to completely rewrite the story. Just because it once was doesn't mean it's going to forever be. So now you're in a position going, hey, these are some of the things that happened last time, which we basically round circle back to the beginning of this. But then you're also in a position going, how can I write my story better? How can Stephen be a better position? So if instead of my story being Stephen's always bad at dieting, no one likes him and he's horrible, and go like, hey, not everyone likes Stephen, and that's perfectly okay, but Stephen can love himself, you've automatically changed the narrative. The behaviors that follow that narrative have completely changed. You're no longer in a position to protect this story of yourself. You're in a position now to empower the new story. And this is where your story and your identity link so close to each other that when you change how you see and perceive yourself, the behaviors that follow completely change.
Yeah, because now you won't give a shit whether those people like you, because you're going to be surrounding yourself with an even better, like, you need to have the confidence. Like, it comes from freaking acting. You need to have the confidence by doing the things that will actually attract the people that enhance your life. And you need to change the narrative that, oh my God, no, like, there's no way that I can just create that. But yes, it is hard when it's within your own family, but you can't change anybody. You can only inspire change. And that starts from you. And if they don't want to change, then they're going to have to learn the hard way probably getting sick, probably ending up in the doctor's hospital, having in like having sore knees, sore pain, all that kind of stuff, because they continue down an unhealthy route. And it usually takes a shock horror for them to want to change their habits. But hey, look at where you are now and where you've put yourself. And in that as well, it's when you give yourself that action step and you ask yourself, what have I done to actually change? Have I actually done what I know I need to do, or done what I wanted to do because it was more comfortable? How can I change the outcome? Is there anyone I can ask for help? Is there anyone that I can employ? And there's many times where you'll get a coach in this and you'll still keep repeating the same pattern without realizing, hey, you're not in the same situation now. You have someone you can trust. That's why you employed them. And you've grown in the process. You fucked up. You learned your mistakes. Now look at where you are.
Exactly. And like, that's what I do with a lot of my coaching, in the sense is trying to help people understand that, you know, the past does have a lot to do with the present, but that doesn't mean it has to control the present. And that story you tell yourself is very powerful in the outcomes you are looking for. So it's like, when you spend the time to go, right, I am going to challenge these beliefs. I am going to look at this from a different perspective. And this is why I love using the glasses technique. And every single client gets taught the same thing. You have 4 to 5 pair of glasses in front of you, all different colors. Now, the key here is I want you to label the glasses and their colors in a different viewpoint. So it could be pink glasses could be love. Orange glasses could be rational. You could have yellow glasses and it could be an angry view or apathetic view of life, right? And the situation you going through, you go, hey, what glasses I'm going to put on? So if you've been angry, you go, oh, hate the situation. You go, right. And I always go, remember, what pair of glasses can we put on that's going to allow us to see this in a different light? And the person goes, let's put on the pink glasses. You're like, perfect. So pink is love, right? Or whatever you deem that to be. And then you go, now how do you see this situation by putting the glasses on? And this person's like, wow, okay, I have a different viewpoint. We haven't done anything. All we simply done is just ask you to take a different viewpoint. And the glasses technique is used there to help you take different perspectives. But what it's occurring is, as time goes on, not only do you have a tool to deal with different situations that you no longer call it the glasses technique, you just automatically take different viewpoints, which is a beautiful thing. But second of all, you get to in a position of get to question some of your own narratives, in the sense that when you see something from a certain viewpoint, you go, am I truly seeing this in the way it's meant to be? Or am I projecting pain from the past onto this situation? And you see that a lot when someone messes up or they claim they've messed up a diet. And you go like, are you projecting the past? Let's put on a different glass and see what it is. And the person's like, well, I had a very busy week. I struggled. The kids were having problems. One of them broke their wrist. And then I've had a lot of deadlines at work. And you go, right. So is this a problem? Or is this you dealing with the situation? The person's like, well, I dealt with it. I'm like, well, there we go. So why are we projecting the past? So the simple use of those glasses gives the person the ability to change the narrative, change the perspective for going on, that it's no longer when I do some of these things, it's actually, hey, you did something to help you. It wasn't because you're terrible. It's not because you're bad. And it's not because you're sabotaging. You did something because you had to do something.
Example that will probably sum things up really well, this is, for example, if you did a certain behavior and then your parents whacked you with the belt for like back then, for most people, you did one little thing and you always got the belt. You'll be scared doing that one thing because you know the context of it. So every single time you do something similar to it, you only remember the pain of it, yet you're not realizing you're not in that situation anymore. You've removed yourself from that context and you've grown and you've become your own person. So it's really important to take things off the pedestal and put things into context of who you want to be, not who you were. And once again, the actions you're taking to move in that direction. So yeah, with that, what is one thing that you can sum up for for people who are struggling with, I guess, overwhelm and perfectionism tied into a bundle that stop them from taking the actions they need to take because they won't slow down enough to realize that it's those particular actions and slowing down that leads to them feeling like they have more time.
That was a very long question.
Yeah. I didn't word it very well. You know
what I mean? I would say if a person took the time to care for themselves and love themselves, right? And once you have sorted those two out and ask yourselves, if I change the narrative, my life can change. So it's like when you encompass self-love, self-acceptance, and you're no longer afraid, you're no longer caring for how people notice you, you have the ability now to change your life. And that comes from the narrative. So it's like, change your narrative, change your life.
Because then you're doing it for you and you have a better vision of who you want to be and why. Because something that is powerful is your true value, your locus of control, the things that you care most about are you and your kids, if you're a mom, you and your loved ones. But we don't realize that when we're too busy trying to fill a void or trying to fill a hole. Like I know a client who always wants to go back to a better place, which wasn't really better. She was in a shit place, but it's a fear of abandonment. And that's probably one for next time. But because of this fear of abandonment, she's not slowing down. She's clinging to needing to do everything all the time, to going back to shitty relationships and clinging to things that don't serve her. And the reason I'm saying this is because you'll keep repeating the same shit until you learn the lesson that that shit is there to teach you.
Exactly. The obstacle becomes the way. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. Pretty simple. It's a hard thing to learn. And especially when you are so used to creating a narrative of woe is me, I'm the problem. It takes time, but you also got to recognize that everybody has the ability to change. Everyone has the ability to change their narrative. And we're not saying on this that it's simple, but it's the same thing of putting money into a fund, into the bank, and waiting for it to compound. You don't feel it today and you don't feel it tomorrow. But when you wake up a year from now, when you look back and you're going, damn, the sum of habits, the sum of me has changed. And that is the end goal, basically. It's you've changed the narrative and you changed the outcome.
Yeah, that's all in you. And that's what builds your confidence. So with that, I'm leaving Dallas's Instagram below. It's define by SD. I actually really, really encourage all of you to follow him because he posts up real raw slap in the face, I guess, images that like the ones that I've read out today, they mean nothing to you. They look like just words on a slab of whatever it is. If you're just looking at it, yeah, who cares? But if you actually stop to think about them, you'll realize that the story that you tell yourself makes you think they're not true until you realize, hey, this is holding me back. Hey, this is relatable. You won't see it as that until you become conscious of that. So sit with it and actually question yourselves and take action because you want confidence. Confidence doesn't come from wishing. It comes from doing, trying, fucking up. And that's why when I said a strength, persistence is one of the greatest strengths because it'll cut through rock as that image goes. Without persistence, that's when you keep reverting back to the you that you never wanted to be. So remember that.
I love it.
A last word.
I would say for anybody listening, take the time to just be present, enjoy life, and find your form of meditation. And the reason why I say form is it could be exercise. It could be anything that requires you to just breathe, process, and let it go. Be in that position for a decent amount of time per week, And you're going to notice your ability to handle overwhelm, anxiety, and your ability to change the narrative becomes infinitely easier.
Thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to pop onto Spotify or iTunes, give it a 5 stars, and let me know what parts of this resonate with you. And if there's anything at all that allows you to see something differently, actually speak about it so you reinforce it and act on it straight away. Because if you don't act straight away, it soon turns to dust, smoke, something in the air.
Shit.
Shit.